This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. Thursday edition of the program. Beautiful day outside. Hopefully people are enjoying the weather, and you're taking us with you. If you've got the phone app, just download the 710 ESPN phone app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. You can download it for free, and you can listen to the show wherever you go, hanging out in the sun, enjoying this awesome weather out there. So we got a good show in store for you. John Clayton will join us at 4 o'clock, as he normally does. And John Paul Morosi at 4:30, talk some baseball as negotiations continue between the union and the league. And it doesn't feel very positive right now. We'll get into that at 4:30. And then everybody's favorite, Paul Moyer, will join us at 5 o'clock. So a lot coming your way. Stay tuned for all of it. You guys can text in throughout the show, 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. So anything you've got to say, you can throw it in there, including mean texts. We'll do those tomorrow as we unveil your venom and your unkind things that you text into us each and every day. Just be creative with it, and maybe it'll make the air tomorrow. But we've got something for, as Jim likes to call them, the cooking people. Some stats to show you why you should only let Russ simmer, as Mora put on here, let Russ simmer and not let, and you shouldn't let Russ overcook. Boy, she's got them all in here. This is great. But you, and Dave, I know you were big on this. You got into, you know, Seahawks wins when Russell throws 25 times or more versus when he throws 25 times or less. And the 25 times or less, they win 82% of the time in the regular season, 75% of the time in the playoffs. If he throws more than 25 times, 60% win percentage in the regular season, 50% in the playoffs. So,
yeah,
it's those numbers tend to make your case.
Well, here's the thing, too, and I know people are going to text this in. Well, you throw a lot when you're behind. So, you know, that is something that you kind of temper it with. But, you know, I'm just going through and looking at his stats. And, you know, I don't know why I picked the 25 number. It just seemed like, you know, from doing the postgame show for whatever, 6 years until I went to the booth, just, you know, we'd get the NFL Jesus, you know, stats right after and go through. And there's just so many times where he's like 16 for 21, 18 for 24, you know, and you know, in those games, I mean, they typically win. And so it just kind of got me thinking. But again, yeah, some of the ones where they, you know, where they have to come from behind, like 2017 wasn't a very good year. And that was the year that he had the most attempts in his career. And this is going into 2018, by the way. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a formula. It's almost like a sweet spot. And, you know, and I'm not sure if we're going to get into this later or not, but, you know, also the fact that what the Seahawks really do well is they run the ball really well, and then they take the ball away. And those are two things that they did really well last year, too, that really helped kind of, you know, gloss over a lot of the warts, because, you know, the defense wasn't great, and there wasn't, you know, a lot of times that they won the game for him other than taking the ball away. So, yeah, it's just and it's not so much for Russ, because, you know, remember in 2015 when he went on that streak? I mean, he's good. He's accurate. His percentage has always been really good. Anything, you know, even close to 65% is great. You know, over that is phenomenal. And then, you know, the fact that he's only thrown double-digit interceptions three times in his 8 years. So it's, you know, it's kind of a formula. There's the run in there, and we'll get into those stats later. But, you know, run the ball, take the ball away, and then have Russ just be very efficient, which includes some shots downfield like we talked about. But yeah, it's it to me, and it's not so much for Russ, it's much more because of, for the team, that's really the best formula for them. So yeah, I went through and looked at every single game and how many attempts he had, and yeah, it's pretty, I mean, especially the 75 or the 82% regular season. I mean, that's, they're 27-6. And then you look at, you know, when he threw it, you know, more than that, we're talking 46-30-1. So they had the tie against Arizona. So 60% win percentage versus 82% when he throws more than 25 times.
Well, Dave, the question I have then is that why is there such a growing crowd of let Russ cook people? You know, that's the thing, because every time you talk about this, and I've written down the stats and I look at them and I'm going, okay, I understand that Russell Wilson's a franchise quarterback, future Hall of Famer. He's the strongest asset you have on the team. But when you have these numbers of a winning percentage of 82% in the regular season, 75% in the playoffs, when you throw fewer than 25 passes, and how it goes in correlation, to it goes down every time you go up. I imagine if you did every time he went 30 passes or 35 passes, that it would get worse and worse. And understandably, and you pointed that out, people will say, well, yeah, you have to throw more when you're behind. But it's just, as you said, Dave, a winning formula. So I don't quite understand it. And the other part that I go back to, maybe some of the intangible parts, or I guess you could call them tangible parts if you want, but with fewer passes, you have fewer chances of turning the ball over. When the ball's not in the air as much, you're not going to have it intercepted. And so, and we've seen how good he is at taking care of the ball with keeping within the 25 limit. So fewer turnovers, it plays into the Pete Carroll formula. And I also like, I mean, more control of the clock. And especially now with the defense that Seattle has, you don't want to see that defense out there any more than you have to. So if you start chucking it around a little more than you have been, again, cooking people, I get it. You know, Russell Wilson, you want to see him throw more because he's so good at it and he's so accurate. And we know about the deep balls and how he can be a quick strike guy. We've seen him in the fourth quarter. We've seen him in every type of situation. But more and more, I come back to all this fundamental stuff of, well, fewer turnovers. You don't want to see your defense any more on that field than you have to, especially without Clowney or any pass rushing next year. And there's just too many things, too many variables for me to keep things the way they are right now than to change the strategy with what you're doing with the cooking people.
I do love hearing you appeal to the cooking people, Jim. That's the cooking people.
Yeah, well, I kind of get a kick out of it. It's kind of like, you know, you kind of feel like, oh, gee, you know, it's almost like seam heads in baseball where you feel like you need to get up to speed. You know, the seam heads in baseball, it's like, man, I can't believe you still value RBIs and you still value some of those old school stats. It's almost like, you know, running the football. Why would you value that when we could show you how it's so much different? But yeah, the cooking people can just take a flying leap in Lake Washington if they want, because I'm a disciple of Dave Wyman stats right here.
Okay. Well, the cooking people are free to text in to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. And if you identify yourself as such, as part of the cooking crew, is it that you want to see Russ throw the ball more? You want more attempts? You want 30, 35? I don't know, whatever number you're looking for. Or is it about not wanting to see him have to bail them out, not wanting to have to watch him try to work some magic at the end of the game because Pete is uber comfortable with getting behind? He doesn't care if they're trailing up. Obviously, he doesn't want to, but he's very comfortable with telling you over and over and over, you can't win the game in the first, you can't win the game in the second or the third. And he's very comfortable going into that fourth quarter down. It doesn't seem to bother him, but it feels like, I guess I'm trying to play devil's advocate and speak for the cooking people. Maybe they get a little tired of seeing Russ have to do it all, not by himself, it's a team game, but he's got to do it in the fourth quarter. He's got to work some magic. This offense has to work some magic because they've sort of plodded along through the first three quarters very often, and then boom, it's on his shoulders to really work something out. Why not get started earlier, whether it's up-tempo, whether it's being a little more aggressive in the play calling? That doesn't always result in more attempts. It's just a different approach. How does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess you'd have to go back and look at what you consider an aggressive play call would be one thing. And then number two, how many times did they
Well, you know me, Dave. I just want to see tempo. I'd like to see them pick up the tempo early. It's not about more attempts. I can live with 25. But I would like to see them mix it up with not draining the play clock down into the red numbers every single time.
Well, and that's a perfectly sane thought, Bob, you know, because I mean, look, it, and I guess that was kind of my question in the email was like, well, what do you want then? Do you want him? Because actually, you know, he threw it two times less per game than Mahomes. So Mahomes, he only played in 34 games, and Mora wrote in, you know, the fact that, you know, that Patrick Mahomes, he did have fewer attempts, but if you average it out, he threw it, I think, 34 times a game. Russ threw it 32, you know, which, you know, certainly didn't fit that the model going into 2018 as far as, you know, 25 attempts or more, but. And then they had a good season last year, and they were good. So, and this is funny. I'll go back to this again because as Russ has gotten better, it makes sense to me for him to throw the ball a little bit more every year because he's gotten better. But remember when I brought that up to Pete? Now, that was a long time ago. You know, maybe it was going into the 2014 or 15 season when, you know, we did a little production meeting and asked, you know, do you think that the attempts are going to start to go up? And he really bristled against that because, you know, he has a formula, yet they, you know, they have kind of crept up there. So, you know, for Russ, he's gotten better. And so, but does that mean that you should have him throw more? Because, it, you know, if you go back and look, the running game, and again, the two best indicators, I had our awesome intern, Nishant Kondapudi, put it together an Excel sheet, and just looking at two categories, run game, if you're in the top 10 run game during the regular season, or top 10 in turnover ratio, the number of times and the number of teams that make the playoffs. And the Seahawks have been really good, especially in the years when they won the Super Bowl and went to the Super Bowl. They were, you know, either one or fourth or fifth in both of those categories. So, you know, that's really what helps you win. But here's the other thing, too. I think that because there's so much more, I mean, I don't know if you guys agree with this, but it seemed like to me after this year, maybe going into this season, maybe about midseason, everybody nationally embraced Russell Wilson. Like he didn't get the respect that, you know, he deserved nationally as far as, you know, just being in the conversation for MVP. And now that everybody has woken up, it's like, well, why don't you let him throw more? Why don't you, you know, call some trick plays? Or I don't even know what they think is aggressive. Because, you know, one of the modern coaches right now that everybody wants to emulate is Kyle Shanahan. And again, the run game and some of the things that they did and when they ran it, I mean, that wasn't progressive at all. You know, but yet they made it work. So I just don't understand what people's sort of definition of let Russ cook is. And that's what I think is. And it's great conversation, you know. And if somebody wants to text in and say, okay, you want more pre-snap motion, I think Maura and I were talking about that, you know, going in that the Seahawks had the least amount of pre-snap motion. You know, I'm not sure what that means. I mean, you used to take – usually what you would do in the old days, when you go in motion, you could tell whether it was man or zone, right? Because if it's man-to-man, somebody's going to go flying across the formation with the motion. If it's zone, everybody's just going to kind of adjust and drop a little bit differently. So that was kind of an indicator. But I don't know that that necessarily accomplishes anything, you know. And really, you could say the same thing with up-tempo. But, you know, the argument, Bob, I would say, okay, yeah, if you and I don't think you should go up-tempo all the time, and I don't think that's what you're suggesting either.
No. Mix it up.
Yeah. Right. And so, and not necessarily at the end of, just at the end of the half and just at the end of the fourth quarter, because Russ is pretty good in those situations. But again, you know, there's a downside to that too. You know, coaches want to get in the perfect play against the perfect defense. And if you're in hurry up and, you know, you want to get, you know, different, personnel groupings in there, and you want to, and that's one of the things that you can do to really put pressure on a defense is running guys on and off the field, making them really think. And then, you know, when you get in up tempo, now you can't do that. You can't check, you can't audible, you can't, you know, and then the linemen get tired. And so there's all kinds of things, but I would say, okay, but he's pretty good in those situations. We know in the 32 wins in overtime and fourth quarter, he's been in up tempo and he's been pretty damn good because he leads the league since he entered in wins with 33 or 34 now. So, yeah, there's lots of things. I just don't understand exactly what it is that people want. And I guess the point of my study really was just to look at what is the best formula, not just for Russell Wilson, but for this team and for Pete Carroll's team and the way they want to run offense. And, you know, it just turned out that it's a pretty markedly high number as far as win percentage, going from 60% to 82% when he's throwing 25 or less. Now, during a game, you got to do what you have to do. You have to sort of, you know, match the tempo. But it kind of reminds me, I said this about, and I'll stop here in a minute because I've been on a soliloquy here for the last 5 minutes. But you know, it kind of reminds me of, you know, okay, well, let's do this because that's what he does really well. It kind of reminds me of when you at the end of the game, you see a stat and the guy, every time he touched the ball, he got 10 yards. Like, well, you should have given it to him more. Well, it doesn't really work that way. Like, it is in that situation that worked. But that doesn't mean every time you give him the ball, he's going to get 10 yards because he's got the hot hand. So, yeah, just going back and looking at, well, here's, you know, these things that they need to do. There's a lot that goes into play calling and a lot to go in that goes into what your offense is all about. And, you know, I think for us that, you know, if you watch the game 3-4 times, you get some ideas. What about this team? I watch the NFL. I watch Red Zone. You know, why aren't we doing these kinds of things? Yeah, I'll bet you pretty easily Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer could give you 10 reasons why they're not doing those things.
Yeah, my reasoning for wanting to see the – sorry, Jim, I sent you a message there. But it's as far as the tempo, and it's not even – you know, hey, come out that first series and boom, snap, 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 go. It's not about excitement. It's not about I want to be more entertained. To me, it's about keeping the defense off balance. I think you can get a defense that feels like they're comfortable because they know you're just draining that clock down. They're watching that play clock. They know it's coming. And maybe, you know, maybe you mix it up within that drive. Maybe that first snap you do drain that play clock down into the red numbers. And boom, that next play. And I know a lot of it depends on the success of the first play. But it's just to use a boxing analogy, when I was boxing, my coach would always talk about, don't try to throw every punch as hard as you can. Not every punch can be your knockout punch because your opponent's going to adjust to it, going to adjust to the speed, adjust to the power. You just touch them. You just touch them. And then, boom, you bring in the right hand. You put some steam behind that. And then you touch them. Then you touch them a little bit here and there. And then, boom, you bring in the big power right hand or the left hook. You set it up. You keep them off balance so there is no pattern truly to follow. I guess that's more of how I'm looking at the offense, to use a boxing analogy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just – didn't we talk about the – okay, I'm looking at these numbers from last year. It's kind of funny because we're talking about an offense like they're 26th in the league. I mean, I'm fine. When we trash on the defense, okay, sign me up for that because I don't think the defense is very good. But we talk about the offense like they're as bad as the defense, and they're not. They were number 8 in the league last year. They averaged 375 yards per game. And I don't know. I get a kick out of it. And maybe it has something to do with Russell Wilson, those rumors, or maybe they're not rumors, you know, that he wants Antonio Brown to come to Seattle, or that he liked Jake Heap's tweet about the Seahawks offense needs to be more aggressive. And so maybe that's how these things get started. But I guess I could be with you, Bob, on the up-tempo thing, if you want to do more of that, because I know sometimes when the clock gets down to 5-4-3-2-1, delay a game, and, you know, it's like, wow, what are they doing? But at the same time, you could argue, well, every time they milk 10 seconds off that clock and get down to 5-4-3-2-1, 10 fewer seconds, your defense is going to be on the field. So there's so many different ways to look at it. And I just don't think that the offense is a major concern with this team. It's actually a major strength of this team, especially when you think about the weapons they're going to have this year. Whether you're going up-tempo, conservative, you know, doing the 9 route thing, going deep with it. I'm trying to sound like I know what I'm talking about with football, Dave, with the 9 route.
You know, make sure you drop in single high safety somewhere.
And then I always come back to, do you want to listen to the cooking people, or do you want to listen to Brian Schottenheimer, who's in the league, who's an offensive coordinator, who's calling the plays, who looks at all the tendencies of the opponent, all the strengths of his own team, the weaknesses of his own team? Do you want to just rely on him, Or do you want to, you know, say, oh, maybe the cooking people are right. Maybe we should let Russell air it out more and be more aggressive and go more up-tempo. No, I don't think so. I'm signing up with Schottenheimer every time because I loved it 2 years ago, when they were 0-2, when they let Russell cook a little more than he should have. Well, they started the season poorly, and they went back to the formula, and they started winning again. So I guess that's where I am on this. I just I don't know. The cooking people, man, I got no use for them.
Really quick, just before we go to take two, from the 907, of course, this comes from Alaska. I thought this was a great analogy. It says, it's like the joke about why don't they build the whole plane out of the black box material? Because the black box material, you know, it always survives a plane crash, right? And, you know, his analogy is, why don't they build a whole offense out of whatever it is they do down 9 in the fourth quarter? Because that seems unstoppable. I think that's a perfect analogy.
That's solid. No, that's good. Good stuff. And it's not a conversation that's going to go away. I agree with you, Jim. The least of their problems is the offense. I guess you could look at it and say, yeah, they're good. Could they be great? Could they be even better? What can you do to make it even better to take some heat off of a very uncertain defense? Something we can certainly dig deeper into. But right now, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two.
Shall I read it?
Did we lose Maura? I thought Maura was going to read it. But go ahead, Dave, read it.
All right. NFL owners tabled the 4th-and-15 alternative to the onside kick as it was not expected to pass during today's vote. There was approval for a bylaw change that will now allow 3 players to return from IR instead of just 2, which I don't think that's that noteworthy. I guess to me, Bob, the thing with the 4th-and-15, it's just gimmicky. It just doesn't follow the flow of a game. Like, after every score, there's a kickoff. And it seems very just made up and gimmicky to me.
Yeah, I was much more accepting of it once I learned that they had the option as a head coach. You had the option to go for 4th-and-15, or you could go onside kick if you want. That you still had that onside kick option. So at that point, I backed way off of the 4, because I'm with you. 4th-and-15 seems a little goofy. Maybe we would see it and go, man, this is great. This is exciting and fun. Yep. But the fact that the coach has had an option, I like that. But now it's not even part of the conversation, as that's been tabled.
Hey, as far as that 4th-and-15 being tabled, can I give you a Dave Wyman impression? And that's this. Hey, come on. Come on. What? Tabled it.
Jim was so looking forward to this.
just go ahead. I mean, why do you have to table it? Why don't you just vote on it and vote it down if you want, and at least let it get out there to a vote? And I can see how you'd say it might be gimmicky, but I think it might be fun too, and I was looking forward to it, but it's not to be.
Things have gotten contentious between the MLB and MLBPA since the sliding scale pay cut proposal. Here is ESPN's Jeff Passan with the latest.
The Players Association is essentially going to treat that Tuesday offer from Major League Baseball like it never existed. They're just going to go and make an offer themselves about what they want. And that offer is going to include more than 100 games in the season, as opposed to the 82-game season that MLB had proposed. And it's also going to talk about how they will be paid their full prorated share of their salaries. And that is a big sticking point here.
You know, all of my optimism about the season has gone down the drain because the owners sent out a proposal they knew the players would not accept. It was a non-starter the second it went out the door. If you read it, you're going, well, you know they're not going to accept it. And you saw the reaction. They treated it like a piece of Kleenex and they blew their nose on it and threw it away. The same is happening with the Baseball Players Association. They're going to submit an offer now saying, we're going to ignore what you just sent us. Here's what we want. And the owners are going to do the same thing. It's a non-starter. They're not going to agree to it. It's just I'm not even sure why they're going through the exercise, because they each of them know that the other is going to go, this is ridiculous.
Well, it just part of the negotiating process. I was listening to a couple people banter about it on ESPN, but you know, and I don't know how much farther off this is than any first time, you know, when you first submit something, and then there's a counter. I don't know how far off this is from what's typically happened with baseball between the players and the owners, but I'm hoping this is just part of the negotiation process. And you know, I get both sides are going to look bad, but I still think that the players are going to end up looking way worse. I think
all right.
Jim wanted us to go to break there.
All right. So, that's fair enough. Fair enough. I thought he may want to jump in there, but we'll get into more of that later on. Meanwhile, the NFL has extended the virtual offseason by 2 weeks. So we're going to hear from Seahawks coach Pete Carroll on how they're approaching the unique offseason. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up in less than 15 minutes, we'll talk a little baseball, let you hear a bit from Jerry DePoto, who was on with Danny and Gallant this morning, and do a little comparison between the Mariners and that trash organization, the Oakland A's. We'll get into that. Meanwhile, the NFL, as we talked about, Roger Goodell sent out a memo to all 32 NFL teams today about the next phase of reopening team facilities. According to Ian Rappaport, Goodell says he's hopeful the NFL can bring coaches back into their facilities as early as next week. And the league is also extending the virtual offseason by 2 weeks, but they are preparing for an on-time regular season and then adjusting if necessary. Now, Pete Carroll was on his latest Flying Coach podcast talking about a few different things. And as far as the virtual OTAs and everything like that, cut number three, here's Pete explaining to Steve Kerr how they're handling that.
We're just finishing week four of what we would refer to in the old off-season format as phase one. That's the first phase when guys can come in and work out with the strength and conditioning coaches and meet with the coaches, but no football on the field. And that lasts for 3 weeks. We are now in week four of that. We've extended that phase one, two more weeks to the end of the month, and then we'll see what happens from there. But so what we're doing now is we're doing all of the football meetings virtually. And as we do that, we're taking our guys along, and man, we're trying to do everything we can to make it as real and is kind of compatible for the learning that needs to take place, and hopes that, you know, the transference of that information to the field will happen when we get there.
So they're finding their way around it. I mean, there's no football on the field, even if everything's normal right now. They're not out there in pads and helmets and tackling each other. So it feels like they can get everything done that they would otherwise be able to get done. And every other team's in the same boat, so nobody has an advantage here. But when he talks about meeting with strength and conditioning coaches, and Dave, you would know better than anybody, are they working you out there? Are they giving you a game plan? Like, Dave, we want you to put on 15 pounds. We want you to put on 10 pounds. And here are the exercises. We want you to build up your leg strength or your chest or whatever. Are they getting into specifics when you're talking about working with strength and conditioning? Are they doing it right there in front of you? Are they sending you home with homework? How does that work?
Well, yeah, usually, you would first of all get there and they'd see, you know, where they test you, and then they, give you exercises that they want you to do to get better or get to where they want you. But I don't know how you're able to do that with the rookies. I mean, unless you say, okay, the guy only had 18 bench reps at the combine or whatever, we want to get your bench up, just as an example, you know, so I'm going to give you a little bit heavier bench routine or things like that. I was listening to Dwayne Brown the other day, and he was talking about how he's doing more like smaller muscles and mentioned the yoga and things like that. So everybody has a different, workout based on their age, their position, things like that. I just don't know how they make those evaluations, you know, like you haven't really seen the rookies. And, you know, a lot of times a guy will come back in minicamp and, you know, I've heard coaches go, wow, look at him, man, that guy was working hard. And, but you just don't get a chance to see that now. So, but like you said, Bob, everybody's on the same level. So, you know, but that's kind of how the strength coaches go. I had a strength coach in Denver that used to take me through an entire workout. It was during the season and almost everything was ISO, you know, where like he was pushing against me. So I didn't have to lift any weights because it was hard to lift weights during the season. I mean, These guys are the best that there are. So, and the Seahawks have made some changes there. And they've got some really good guys working on strength and conditioning right now. So, but yeah, it's just going to be, like you said, everybody's pretty much on the same boat. And I got to imagine, you know, there's a lot more time because there's not like travel. You know, there's a lot of things that you normally would do that you can't. So, you know, I would think that, I know I would. I would take it as an opportunity, not that I am now, but I would take it as an opportunity to get in really good shape.
That's not happening right now. Okay. All right. You still have time, Dave. There's still time. No rush. Cut number four. The coach talked about just so far not a ton of communication from the NFL. He feels like they're gathering information right now.
The NFL is working really carefully to not take any false steps here. You know, they're just doing a really good job, I think, of taking in all the information and watching everything that's going on and following the regulations and all of the format that's happening so that when we finally do make a call, you know, they'll make a decisive call and we'll move forward. But we don't know. We're not talking to the league. They're not telling us much right now because I think they're still holding to. I know that they're working really diligently to figure it out. But it's not time yet to kind of unveil what's next. So really, we got the word that we're going 2 more weeks of this phase one format to finish the month, and then we'll figure out from there, you know, when they tell us what's going on. So, and a little bit, sounds a little different. Sounds like you guys have some options in there that you can exercise. We don't have much of anything that we can do at this point. The league's pretty uniformed.
Yeah, and then he's talking to Steve Kerr again on his Flying Coach podcast. And cut number five, and then I want to get your thought on it, Jim. We talked about this yesterday, that the NFL's in a position of luxury on some level, that they can watch these other leagues that are supposed to be playing right now get started before them, what they do well, what doesn't work well, and educate themselves. And cut number five, he's saying basically if the NBA and Major League Baseball can get underway, the NFL can take notes from their experiences.
If basketball can get started first, you guys have much smaller teams and smaller numbers to work with to at least work to learn how to control, you know, your environment. With baseball if maybe baseball comes after that, you know, you guys got 15 players, 12, 15 players, and they've got 25 players, whatever, and a substantial support group. But you get to football now, it's 90 at camp. It'll be, you know, 65 players anyway. Then we have a whole host of players. We'll learn from you guys and how you guys, you know, proceed and all that. It'll be a real interesting exercise. We'll just all figure it out as we go and do it really well. And there's a lot of great brains on it, so we should figure it out as well as it can be done.
Yeah, well, that's the one thing, one advantage the NFL has. They don't get started. I mean, well, the training camp's the end of July, but once the season gets going in September, maybe they'll have to streamline some of the preseason games. But, yeah, you can see what the NHL is doing, what the NBA is doing, maybe even college football, and maybe you can learn from some of the mistakes of MLB. We'll see if that ever gets figured out. But the one thing I keep coming back to in these uncertain times and the crazy situation everybody's in is that you like having Pete Carroll as your coach, because this is a guy that's, I don't think Pete's sitting there with Schneider or even with his wife at home saying, man, this is terrible. I can't believe, you know, we can't get the guys together. We can't have mini camp. You know, usually it's phase one and I'm in person with all my players. I think he's just looking at, he turned every negative into a positive. And so I'm sure he's doing the same thing right now, embracing the challenge, making the best of it. And I think the Seahawks are going to be better off for it.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. He's got the perfect personality just to go with the flow, good or bad. He's not going to panic. He's not going to create tension. He's just working with what's available to him. So you're right. Couldn't ask for a better personality in this situation. Well, meanwhile, the Major League Baseball situation doesn't appear to be great. The league and the union are hashing out a plan to try to get the season going. The minor leagues are being trimmed down dramatically. Mariners GM Jerry DePoto discussed how they're trying to support their minor league players right now. He was on with Danny and Gallant this morning. We'll let you hear a bit of what he had to say coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we will ask the professor, what happened to 4th and 15? What happened? Jim is going to demand answers, by God, and we're going to get them coming up with John Clayton at the top of the hour. Jerry DePoto was on with Danny and Gallant this morning, went over some things that they're doing with their minor league system, but just some background and by way of comparison. the A's are an organization that if I'm a free agent in baseball and I've got teams knocking on my door and I've got multiple opportunities and one of those teams were the A's, they'd be literally the last organization I would look at because they have pulled moves like this in the past, and what they're doing now I find reprehensible. Jeff Passan sent out a tweet yesterday talking about the fact that they pay minor leaguers $400 a week and as a stipend. They're doing away with that. And he said, basically, it's to save just a little over $1 million. Their owner, Jeff Fisher, is worth a little over $2 billion. So he's saying, just some rough math. Say there are 200 players in a minor league system for a team. Paying each player $400 a week for June, July, and August is $5,200 per player. To pay every minor leaguer would have cost the Oakland A's a hair over $1 million. Owner Jeff Fisher is worth an estimated $2 billion. And then John Heyman said the added shame about the A's halting $400 weekly stipends for minor leaguers is that they remain A's employees, but they're unpaid employees. They cannot seek free agency or file unemployment. And again, that was so the A's could save around $1 million. And I know it's easy for me to spend somebody else's money, but when you're talking about guys who are supposedly going to be part of your organization's future, and you're going to build upon these guys, and it's $400 a week, and you are worth over $2 billion, and you're saying, yeah, let's shave $1 million off the books. That just seems reprehensible to me. I'm not sure how you guys feel about it, but I think it is lame.
Well, I guess I don't take into the fact that the guy has $2 billion just because he's a businessman, and he's making a business move. But I think this is a bad business move. Because, you know, that's going to not create any goodwill with your players.
None.
And we know that the A's have always been cheap. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a bad business move. And, you know, and I think in this whole thing, I kind of brought this up to El Hombre, is that I think everybody feels like sports is kind of this goodwill thing. But it's a business, you know. Like, at the end of my career, The Broncos, like, they didn't thank me. They didn't, you know, they took like 3/4 of my pay my last year, and I knew it was coming, and it was something that I knew was going to happen. And then at the end of the season, they were kind of fighting with my agent over how much, because I had a certain amount I could earn back with playing time. I ended up playing in 11 games, and they were trying to, you know, kind of short me on that. And, you know, that's just the way it is. And, you know, it doesn't – and look, I probably played the bleeding heart, you know, where at the end of my career I would have liked a thank you, or, you know, how about, you know, can you invite me back to camp? But it was like, nope. And they went and made a business move, and it's just – it's still a business. I mean, it is sports, and it is – but I think people think of it more as being this goodwill project or something, that we all need sports and everything. So – you know, let's just do whatever and dig into that $2 billion that you have and make it so, you know, we can all watch sports, when really it really is just a business. That's the way those guys are. It's like the other day when I said, you know, the Siegfried Roy thing, you know, the tiger didn't go crazy. The tiger went tiger. The owners are just going owner. They're being who they are. And I don't think that should be, like, I'm not that surprised by it, you know. And I was talking to somebody on the text here. I mean, I think that people can relate more to the players, and for that reason, a player wanting to get paid when he's not going to work, they can relate that to that more than they can to, well, why doesn't the billionaire just dig into his deep pockets and pay people anyway? I think that's how it's going to come out. I'm not saying I'm on their side. I'm just saying that I think that's how that's going to look.
Yeah, well, you can look at what the Mariners are doing, and it's the opposite. Jerry DePoto, again, on with Danny and Gallant this morning. Cut number 6, and Jim, we'll get your thoughts on this. I want to play these cuts back-to-back. So cut number 6, he says they're going to pay their minor league players their stipend through the end of the season.
You know, I mean, we're still hopeful that there's some form of a minor league season, but we did inform our minor league players yesterday. I mean, yesterday was a very active day for us in our operation, but we did inform our players yesterday that they would continue to receive their stipend through the end of the season. And obviously, if we should return to play, they'll receive their typical salaries. But It's important to us with our young minor leaguers that we're not, we can't abandon them in their hour of most need.
So there's that one, and then one more, and then Jim, give me your thoughts. Cut number 7, he says their minor leaguers are their most valuable assets.
These are our most valuable assets, our young players who are coming through our system and project a greater future, and they are the most vulnerable right now, and we need to take care of them, and thankfully we work for an organization that feels the same way, and we did.
Well, yeah, and that's fantastic, and that's what every team should do in Major League Baseball. Take care of the minor leaguers, 400 a week, and show them how important they are to your organization. It's just, it's a small pittance to pay, isn't it? When you're I think of the word karma for that A's owner, and in terms of bad karma, and I hope it befalls him. I hope that it catches up to him at some point. I understand what you're talking about, Dave, with it being a business and not a goodwill venture, but these are different times right now with the coronavirus, and I do kind of look at it as being a goodwill venture this year. And I'm at a point now where I'm just so frustrated by hearing all these different, the owners lowballed them, the owners had this agreement in March, and now they want to do the sliding scale and the prorated, all these different things, and I'm just such a sick individual that I'm at a point now where I'm going, I hope you all screw it up. I hope you don't play at all. I hope you screw up the whole summer and you don't play at all. And then next year when you want the fans to come back and the fans are able to come back, I hope they say, screw you, we're not coming back because of what you did last year, because you guys were all so damn greedy that you couldn't work out an agreement to get back on the field. And so going back to DePoto, and I'll try and calm down a little bit, but it's just reaching a point where you go, really? I don't even want to read the damn stories anymore. You know, I get the Times every morning and I'm reading, you know, Divish has his account of what's going on, and we'll be talking to Morosi later about it, but you just end up shaking your head, and it's just, it's frustrating. And so I'm glad though that DePoto and the Mariners are taking care of their minor leaguers, and DePoto, it should be noted, he's taken a pay cut himself. So I like what he's doing here in Seattle anyway, with the minor leaguers.
One quick one from Ryan Roland Smith, and get your response, Dave. He was on with us and he talked about that A's situation.
But the one thing I will say is the Oakland A's coming out and cutting $400 a week to their minor leaguers. I'm sorry, you have to check any books on that. That is just absolutely despicable in my opinion, because that all those players that you're taking that money away, they can't go collect unemployment. Everyone goes, well, go get a job, you know, stop playing baseball, whatever. It's not the case. You signed a 7-year contract, minor league contract, and all of a sudden now you're stuck at home and they're going to say, sorry, can't fork out $400 a week for you. That, in my opinion, that's something that needs to change.
Yeah. Well, I would say, look, I think that there's a lot of businesses that are cutting people and laying people off and things like that. And my point is that you know, this is still a business, but I don't know about despicable. I just think it's a really bad business move by the A's. I mean, you're not going to build any goodwill with your fans. I think paying the minor leaguers makes you look really good. I think if nothing else, just from a PR standpoint. And then also, you know, when you have players, there's a free agent, you know, and you're trying to woo him. I mean, who wants to go to the A's? I don't think
exactly.
Anybody. So, yeah, I think it's a really bad move by Oakland.
Yeah, and the point that gets lost in this isn't that, oh, we don't want to pay him. Yeah, I mean, everybody's aware of that, but they're still considered A's employees, so they're not technically laid off. They not, you know, listen, you've got 40 million plus laid off that are collecting unemployment now. They can't. So they're still technically employed. They're not receiving any money, so they're holding them in this weird pattern, this holding pattern where we're not going to give you that $400 a week, but you also can't go and claim unemployment either. So that's what makes it even more reprehensible to me, is the fact that they don't give them that option. They're not released. You're still here, but you're not getting paid. So that's just really bad business. Coming up, we got another edition of Mariners Classic tonight at 7 p.m. Randy Johnson strikes out 19, taking on those Athletics in 1997. That's brought to you by Roofers and Waterproofers Local 54. Coming up, the NFL voted on new rule proposals today. We'll get the professor's thoughts on how that turned out. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.